So hello everybody and welcome to Riga Business School Bottom Line Studio podcast. And today my guest is Artūrs Pielēns Pelēns, who represents Squalio Group and is International Business Development Director and also Riga Business School professional alumnus and lecturer. So Artūrs has quite a lot of hats, and my name is Elīna Tiliba. I'm host of today's episode. And I guess before we jump into today's topic, maybe Artūrs, a little bit, tell us more about your professional journey and how you came to where you are today.
Yeah, thank you very much for the questions. And yeah, the journey is interesting, and it's quite long and it's quite rapid. I mean, everything changes over the years. Environment is different every time, and when we look on that. But basically right now I'm managing the business development in quite impressive company, Squalio Group. We are building the business relationships with more than 20 plus countries globally, starting from the Europe, Asia, Africa, and some Gulf regions. And actually I'm quite excited about what I'm doing right now, because it's real fun. I mean, it's you can imagine like playing the game. You can just choose another episode. You want to be episode Africa, so you choose this one. Then you want to more focus on Asia markets, so you can choose this episode. Because each of those markets are so different from everything, starting from the people, from the concepts, from the service perspectives, from how they buy, how they consume, what they ask, how to operate with that. So that's what I'm doing right now. Mm. But of course, how did I get there? It's a long journey, quite much linked also with education, professional education, with Riga Business School and Riga Technical University as well in my background. And of course, this is not my first position. So I've been developing business before in Latvia, in our local markets, just to understand the concept, how to build the services, how to find the customers, how to build some good products for them, how to enable sales and other processes. And when you are more or less aware how to do this here, then you're ready for other markets where I operate right now.
Okay. And if you look back at your career, what would you say is your most, I don't know, challenging or most exciting project that you've worked on?
Right now in Squalio or general? So,
well, general, something that comes to your mind as something that you were like especially excited about.
Typically the excitement comes from the good wins. Mm-hmm. So to win, it's great. Yeah. So then I have to take a look on my biggest wins. And one of the wins I loved the most, I would say, is actually building the one of the products in our well-known company in Latvia. Then it was Latelecom. And I was honored to build a quite good product service, Latelecom electricity product with the name TET, that is well known right now also in the market. So this was something that actually I took a piece from that, from the RBS studies, because it was my master thesis that from the paper went to real life, like real practice. And it was something that I was quite excited. So having the whole life cycle from the idea, design, implementation, sales, management, customer relationships, and of course, numbers in terms of revenue. So it was quite excitement for me.
Okay. And if you had to consolidate all this process you went through in, I don't know, maybe some top three learnings, what would they be if you look back right now?
One of the things is what I learnings that was also like learned by myself, and what I try to now teach to others who are also in business development phases and building some career in a Latvian market or other markets. First of all, people tend to think too much, too long, and they build like too detailed plans, concepts, and analyzes. I actually call this process analyzes paralyzes, because if you analyze too much, you paralyze your growth potential. And so that's why I would say start where you are. I mean, if you see what you could do tomorrow, so start with those maybe small or medium-sized deliverables, what you can deliver, so that they start to come back to you and prove that this is something that you want to build in and add more whatever you are building. So this is one learning. So don't make it too big, too detailed, and then you stop. I mean, make it faster and smoother. Second is, don't do all by yourself. I mean, even less by yourself. The same that case, yeah, you could, why not become entrepreneur? Yeah, you could build your own company, start from scratch, find the, I mean, design the whatever concept, services, build the IT systems, business systems, customer bases, and so on. But if you can find a good partnership or friends or whatever business partners you can find, actually you can be in the market in a question of weeks, maybe months, but it's not about that. I need to, I mean, if you want to be in global market like Africa, you could like sit in some office or whatever, garage, and develop something for Africa. And when it's built, then you think, okay, it's for Africa, but how can I get there? And then again, you build, look, travel, invest a lot, and then you finally maybe are there. But if you, I mean, use open resources available, like internet and connections, LinkedIn and so on, or official channels like IT chambers and so on, you can already find who is there, who knows my customers, potential customers I want to reach, so that I can be in the market really fast. I mean, this time to market is critical, because no one wants to get old, like just building the business empire and then say, okay, it's great, it's done, and now my kids or grandkids, you can take over from that. It's your effort, so you need to own it, you need to lead this. So these are a couple of the learnings I have, and from that perspective, I try to use it in my daily life.
Okay, and if you look, for example, at the leadership, so all these things that you just described, I assume that they require quite a big deal of leadership from your side. So how do you see yourself evolving as a leader through all this process?
Okay, yeah, the question is, what proves you as a being a good leader? So again, it can be the success. So if your leadership style recognizes you and leads you to the desired goals, whatever they are, define it. And so then I would assume that the leadership style is okay, because you can lead yourself to desired directions. Of course, you have to work with this style a lot, because you have to be the leader for many like different instances, like for your people, your team, also sometimes for your customers who trust you. They see your brand, they recognize your brand with your, maybe your personality. Again, you have to be a leader for your customers, proving even if you fail, yeah, for some of the cases, but you fail and you know how to lead out from the failures. Again, you're a good leader. And then you can be a leader for your partners. And actually, I like to build business a lot around partners. I mean, write good plan for you to be more active. And again, you have to now then present your leadership style to the partners. And also for your management, the ones who hired you or willing to or expect the results from you. Also, you have to lead them your good ideas, your way of leadership style, that it helps them to reach their targets. So that's why this and all what I mentioned, these are so different leadership styles. And they all should be, of course, with a focus how I'm going to make these persons or groups satisfied, so that it leads, because leadership needs to lead somewhere, so that it leads to success. But each of those groups expects some other success. Mm-hmm. Customers expects quality of services, I mean, happiness and satisfaction with what you deliver. Management expects revenue growth, new markets, new territories. Your team expects, clarity, visibility about what's happening in the company, what happens with my role, position, how I can gain up my skills and knowledge and something like this. And it means you have to be leader in so many different ways that it's sometimes not even possible, but it's something that we all have to cope with.
Okay. So thank you for sharing this. And And if you start transitioning in your current international business development experience, can you a little bit tell us the journey, let's say you were when you started in Esqualio and how it has evolved now in the company for you?
Yes, when I started working Esqualio, so it was more than 3 years ago. The beginning was quite clear what is expected from me. I mean, the company were willing to build services that can be delivered for global business, and the services were already clear what these businesses are going to be. I mean, services. How they're gonna be managed, and and already some sandbox tests were made. So it means that it was not like from the scratch. I mean, there was sort of service design, understanding what services will deliver, and already proven on a couple of the customers in Latvia and some other countries. So that looks like this is scalable. But it was really small, as I said, sandbox. And since that moment, of course, I actively analyzed. I usually use one of techniques. I also like train it for the students here. It's about four dimensions. That's when you need to scale your service, you need to look on four dimensions. So first of all, is what people you need for that. To scale, to be in this market, what is the people? Skills, knowledge, whatever around people, organization set up so that it can be scaled to these and these and these markets. Second one, what are the products, tools, technologies we're going to use for that? So like how we communicate with the customers, how we sell to the customers, how we deliver to the customers in terms of technologies. And then it's about processes. Again, the same sales, delivery, incident management. So all the process that is part of being us like growing to new markets. And the last one is partners. So which partners I need to be successful in these new territories. And basically it's not easy, of course, but then you start to assemble these things together. Sometimes you start with the partners, you take a look, hey, why not to go in this market, like, I don't know, the same Africa or Dubai, yeah? And you say, okay, potentially good market, good customers, so they might see the value from our services. And the question is, what team I need for that? What technologies, what partners, and what processes? And sometimes you start with the partners, you say, hey, who would love to be our distributor in Dubai? Yeah, what companies are good for us? Yeah, to whom we could say, hey guys, we have these and these services. You have your customers, and your customers want our services because we know that. Yeah, there are some market facts that approves this. You find a partner says, let's sell it. Okay, about process. How do we sell? How do we deliver? How do we do this and that? What technologies we use for that? And so basically within those 3 years, with the sandbox approach, we started to scale, of course, around Latvia, first of all, like our neighbor countries. Unfortunately, for now, I would say we also started to do the good business in Belarus and Russia as well. I mean, neighbor countries closer to us, so we have mentality and understanding about what they expect from us and so on, but right now, unfortunately, everything from that business part was fully cut off, and now we are looking on completely different regions. But despite the fact about all the crisis, because there's been a lot of crisis within the last 3 years, starting from the COVID and the war that started like last year, and we needed to shift the strategy a lot, because when it's COVID, it means even how to open the business in new territory. Typically, we were like packaging the ideas. We went for the long business trip. Without this, no one even were willing to speak with us, and so on and so on. COVID started. It means you're not going to grow anymore. Wait a second. How come? Let's try to still build your business, but through the digital environment. You shift your strategy. You find a balance. Now it's good. Now it works. You can again continue to grow. Then war started. We had our teams, our resources and services in Russia, Belarus, and so on. Now what to do with this? So again, it's like another issue. Now how to go out from this and so on. But actually, what I liked and enjoyed a lot is our government, really. I mean, the support that we get from Latvia, from multiple agencies like IT Cluster, Leah, with the support we can get, as example, we were well supported, and we are still supported a lot with embassies. Yeah, I know, like Russia and Belarus business is lost, and government says no problem. So just find other countries where you see your potential. We're gonna help you a lot so that you can switch from these regions towards, I don't know, Egypt or Uzbek. I mean, any country you wanna. I mean, you wanna target on. And I tell my ideas to IT cluster. They organize the well-packaged business trip together with ambassadors and maybe some other high-level excellences from the Latvian government. We are there, we are presenting ourselves, and we are much faster in these new markets than even ever before. And when I share this story to other countries like Germany, Austria, how they are developing their businesses in other countries, they have never heard about such a support that you can go somewhere with the president of the state. So you can never go somewhere with the president of Germany, yeah, or France or other countries. So, yeah, but and this is good because we are a small nation. We can really build the links with Minister of Economics or Minister of whatever, transportation, or with the same president, plan some joint trips because they want to support us, our government. And they are really ready to listen to us, hear our story and say, hey, I'm going to help you. And this is something that I enjoy a lot, being here in our small nation, because we can really have this link with government support. And it's not so much about money, but just about connections and a willingness to support us. And this is really great.
Okay, okay. And what I'm curious about from what you explained, if I invite you to take one step back, so basically you mentioned that first of all you started with these neighboring countries because the mentality and everything like more well known, but when the neighboring countries are already like explored and you have entered these markets, so what's the decision making process of which other markets to enter? How does that happen even before starting that sandbox principle?
Yeah, and here is the point, what I mentioned before about partners. In each business, you need to find strategic partners. And hopefully your strategic partners are at least at this stage when you choose them, they should be better than you are. I mean, in terms of what means better, maybe they are richer, maybe they have better access to other markets and territories. And when you choose your partners with this mindset, then you say, hey partner, you are good partner, you are global, but can you build business with me here in Baltic states or Baltic states plus Belarus or Ukraine and some other neighboring countries? They say, who you are? Oh, Squalio, never heard about you guys. Yeah, I know, but can you just trust us? This is my plan. This is how we're going to be successful just in this small region. And then partner says, okay, why not? So I don't have business there, so I trust on you, so just prove that you're going to be successful. It takes some time, you work really hard for this partnership to be strong, and you prove them the results. And they see, hey, you Latvians, who the hell are you? So where you have this knowledge, these persons, these skills, and so on. And then when it's, I mean, it's completed with success, again, this leadership questions are finished, you can either you can go back to the partner and say, so partner, you see, this is successful. You can send, so what's next? And if partner already sees the motivation to build more alignment with you and say, actually your knowledge and your capabilities would be really great in these countries where I want to enter, and I already have the budget, funds, and marketing initiatives already activated, but there's so weak partners, but if you could come and help us, I mean, being successful in, I don't know, so Africa, France, or Italy, can you help us to be there? And then I could say, yes, no. I mean, if it's our time zone, our language barriers and everything else, why not? Yeah, our business specifics, I did mention that, is that we deliver services like 100% by distance. So we don't have to be in customer premises to deliver whatever we do for them. It means we are scalable everywhere where you can imagine. And this is one of the ways that you build your business. First of all, yeah, from your outlook perspective. But usually, if you ask me and you say, hey, Arturs, what about Japan? You know, typical question, do you have friends, full family in Japan? No, I don't. Yeah, so I don't have any customer to with whom I could start to build any connections with. But if I have global partners that sees the value from what we deliver, and I say, what about Japan? They say, actually, I have some friends, okay, or customers or prospects from the Japan. And maybe this is time when we can discuss how to open this market. So basically, market opening was driven either by us, sometimes it was really coming from our perspective, sometimes it came from the partners, and sometimes it came from the customers. Because customer who bought the service being in, Germany, who has 26 units across the globe, he buys the service and uses it globally. And suddenly from one purchase, we have actually friends in 26 countries from the one shot. And then from these 26 countries, you can start to think, maybe there's more than this one customer. Either it's from the industry perspective or something else that actually we could try to go there.
Okay, so basically your strategy is based on building strong partnerships with partners who have access and contacts globally.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I would say it's critical. You can have really smart ideas, like Shark Tank level ideas that everyone's willing to like invest in your money. But if these are just ideas and you don't have access to the customers, because customers typically don't want to buy anything because they are, I wouldn't say lazy, they are too busy or they have everything enough. Because when you come with something new, it means, okay, you're going to make problems for me. You're going to sell, you're going to deliver, you're going to take my time. I need to change something in my environment. So it's hard. And if I need to speak with completely pure, fresh customers, it's almost like, I mean, the percent of success is 1-3%. If you can have someone who says, hey, this is my customer, my ally, my account, I have really good connections with, and we meet with this customer like once per quarter, and we spend like 3-4 hours to discuss what about strategies, plans, and other services we could deliver, and I can be in this boat, then my idea can really be beneficial. And that's why I would say if you want to open the business in new territories, new markets, partnerships are absolutely crucial. Because to build, you can build it by yourself, 100%, but then this opportunity will cost a big money. So it means you have to invest a lot.
Okay, and what do you see as maybe some common challenges companies just need to consider as they're entering new markets?
So first of all, new markets sounds big. I mean, the first impression is, hey, Latvia is a small country, so there is no business. I mean, the potential is, the depth of the business is shallow, so we need to go somewhere more. So where the market is big in size, like Germany, France, Spain, US. And if we just take a look on statistics, so many companies fail in those new markets, and then they return back and say, okay, dear Latvia, you are my country of interest, so these are my customers. So that's why I would say the planning is really important. This is part of the success, is really to build the good plan. But again, it's not what I mentioned. Don't do the analysis, paralysis, but make the good, quick entry plan. And the point is, you can fail. And it's fine to fail. I also failed a lot. We tried to go to some Poland. Yeah, it's still secret for me why I just can't be successful in Poland. Yeah, we tried once. We said, okay, not this time. We tried again, not this time. So maybe we'll never be successful there. But no problem. You tried. But I tried small. You make small piece with what you could try this market. You try it. It goes well. Good. You continue. If not, you just step back. But then you make another trial. And if you can actively try those countries, I mean, your market message, your partnerships, your whatever else is needed there, by, like, I call them as a sprints. You define it as a sprint. So sales sprint for, now we are building the sprint actually in APAC region. So it's Vietnam, Malaysia, Philippines, and Cambodia right now. It happens like in parallel today. So it means this sprint is now under creation. Mm. We're building the plan, and we're going to test it in next 1 to 2 months. Mm. I really believe right now that it's going to be successful, but no problem if I will fail. If I will fail, I will learn from that something, and maybe I will try again, but with a different plan. After 3 months, 6 months, 9 months. If I will win, yeah, it's my market and I can go to maybe other regions as well. The same about India. Again, I know that this is good market. I see the good potential. And now I'm putting the plan. And the plans are not copy-paste. I can't go with a plan of Malaysia to the India. And from the India to, I don't know, US. Plans are different. And there are many specifics that you need to take into account. And so that you know that it's really like a key of success.
Okay. And I'm just curious. What is that point where you say, okay, stop, we have for now failed in this market and we just move forward? Because I know that this is a common mistake that, you know, we have invested a lot, so we just invest a little bit more and see and it's not going. So when do you say stop and move further?
And this is a good point because I try to invest not a lot. I try to invest a little, as little as possible through the partnerships. So we cut the investments by multiple parties. And if you invest little, it's much easier for you to say stop, because you invested just in perfect scenario, you invested only your time. Mm. And if it's only pure time investment, then it's not so hard to say, okay, let's stop. And the question when to say stop, I use a technique called hacking growth. What it means, you build the plan. What I mentioned, the plan is really important. And you assemble together people, process, partners to do, and this plan, Poland should be successful. I believe, so let's try this out. And of course, you have some measurable targets you want to reach so that you can say, hey, it's success, bottle the champagne, we can open, drink a bit and enjoy the success. And then when sprint finishes, you define the sprint length. If it's 2 weeks, 1 month, typically not more than 1 month. Then after this period, you can see if you are on track with progress or not. If you are on track, it means you're allowed to go to the next sprint, only then. If you're not on track, you see you're already failing even in the first sprint, where initial things should be done, you return back and say, so it means this is not the best plan. We need to change something. Again, what to change? Change people, change partners, change tools, technologies, or presentations, or change processes. If you have already some ideas how you can hack the growth, you change one or all four of these elements, and you make completely another plan, and you run it in the next sprint. Again, you learn, of course, always, what was successful, what was less successful. You try this next sprint, you come back with a feedback, again, you say, oh, I failed again, no problem. So again, I'm gonna change, I don't know, what, tool, yeah, people, process, something else, partner. And I try another time, and you can hack until you see that you have still new keys to hack. But if you see, I'm hacking, and I have no clue, I have no other partners to choose, I have no other tools to choose, I have no other people to use, and I tried all my processes, so your hackership is finished. You say, okay, thanks. It was sort of failure. Yeah, we learned a lot from this market. So right now, I'm packaging all my hacking tools and bring it back to Squalio. Still, that experience is in my pocket. So I know that anytime I will find a better this plan, I can start to reopen. But with this package, we can't. So that's why I'm against building the huge investment plans, agree on million investments, and then say, we're going to go to Poland, it's going to be our successful market, all efforts there, so now let's recruit some 10, 20 people and open the affiliate. No, come on, no, let's don't do this. Yeah. So build small portions, try them out, see, yes, it tends to be successful, you continue. And then you start to physically invest. Typically, first sprints should be just your time. That's it. Mm. No, okay, the only money maybe are some travels, accommodation expenses. Mm. That's it. But typically, it's only your pure time.
Okay, thank you for sharing this. And as you were talking about these exotic markets before, what I'm curious to hear is, What's your strategy towards navigating the cultural differences? Because one is that business aspect, but another is like totally, again, different mentality, different culture. So how do you navigate that?
Yes, that's a really good question. And it's another hack. And that's about more about people, because tools, more or less, you know, everyone uses Microsoft and Zoom. And so tools are fine for all the markets. Maybe there are some still some aspects, but generally it's all fine. But the partnerships are different and people are different, 100%. And it, maybe even processes. As example, I can give you one good example. So when I mentioned about this APAC region, and one of the target markets is Cambodia, and making this market assessment, we get to know that it's fine to speak in English language because they understand. I mean, the companies we are targeting on knows the English language very well. And they know the English language, but this English language is the language that you barely can understand, because how they pronounce the words and the voice, it's like you sit and you listen, and I mean, it's, you sort of understand this is English, but you basically don't understand anything what was said. And then you understand, okay, so this hack will be different. So it means we can't use something that we were typically using for these markets, but we need to adapt to that. And I mean, and there can be much more aspects, of course, that you need to consider. Also, how they perceive you working by distance. Yeah, how do they trust you? And because if you are becoming like service provider, you need to build. I mean, it's not selling the apples. It means you are baking the cakes together and eating them together. And it's, you are much closer in terms of relationships. And some of the countries just don't want to be in relationship with Latvians or us. Yeah, who you are? So you are so far from us. So how can I trust you? Maybe you are sharing all our information to our competitors or whatever else. Yeah, so. And this is problematic. But again, you can usually fix all those issues, again, choosing the partners. Mm. Yeah, again, that's why I mentioned the partnerships many times. But again, if you know this is your problem, even this understanding the English, what you need to find, either you find a person in Latvia who can translate and use this specific English language and translate to your language, or you just find, again, partnership who is... says, no problem, I have the business already with Europe, and I know this, I mean, language question, and I can solve this. If this partner fits really very well in the value chain of service delivery, so let's try this out, and so on. But yeah, cultural aspects is definitely hard to fix by us being here. That's why when you feel that sprint tends to be successful, then you have to open the wallet and put some investments in local teams. Then this is the time. In Europe, you can basically cover all Europe from Latvia, no problems. But if it's the same APAC region, and you see that it tends to be, or it might be the successful, so I mean, it's a question of when, but you need to build the local team there.
Okay. And as you're mentioning this partnership aspect a lot in our conversation already, I wonder where should one start building even these partnerships, because they do not evolve like this. You know, okay, you get one and then two and et cetera, but where you even start building these partnerships and how?
Yeah, beginning is always hard, because when you are successful, then partners are looking for you and say, hey, I want to be your partner. Yes. You are not in my market. Can you be my partner in my market, and so on? I mean, this is the phase where we are right now. We are being hunted by partners. And this is, I mean, when you enjoy and you say, what you can give it for me? And so what can be the revenue split or GP split? But in the beginning, it's really hard because no one trusts you. It's really hard. It's
I know that you like challenges. So let's assume you entered a completely new company and you had this challenge to build a partnership network from zero. So how would you start?
First of all, you need to definitely define the perfect partner profile. What is your perfect partner? I mean, but really, like, not only like my perfect partner is Microsoft. It's not defined. I mean, it's too general. You need to write down like quite specifically what is the definition of perfect partner. When it's defined, then you need to map and find how many partners in your desired market fits to those criterias. If it's one, two, five, I hope it's more than five, so that you can really like fight for them. And when you already have the list of good partners for this region, they still don't know you. You don't know them, but you just know that you want them because there might be the good fit. Then basically your biggest program for now is not to build the process or build the product or build the service, but just to become friends and close partner with this desired company. And the good point, if you have at least three, four, five companies, so it means you can fail, you can learn, you can improve and go to another one. Again, you can fail, you can improve and go to another one. It means you have five shots for success. You don't have to ruin them all. You shouldn't have five meetings in one day, but you carefully prepare for the first one. And of course, you need to come with to the partner with the idea how they will be rich from your idea. It's like, guys, yeah, this is my idea. I don't know why I'm coming to you. Actually, you're going to be only benefiting, not me, but I can tell you my secrets. And they should listen to you like it should be a so-called killer presentation. Yeah, your idea should be like killing their minds so that they go in evening at homes and they just think, oh, this was like impressive. So we don't do this business, but what he said, it's really like it can change our lives. Of course, you can learn some more details. What are their problems? And how your idea might fix even their problems if you have this information. But you need to just have one win. And if you have one win, then you can add those so-called good lies. You can say, you know, now I'm looking for the partners. Actually, there's only three found and everyone is willing to partner with us. But I mean, yeah, what's your conditions? Yeah, if you have these and these market customers and so on, maybe we can quickly agree on exclusivity for a while. And I can say, others, guys, stop a bit because I want really like be with you. I mean, you need to position yourselves as really good, not like begging, but actually like saying, guys, you're gonna be one. I'm just gonna get some benefits, but most benefits will go to your direction so that they believe you. You have really solid arguments and they say, okay, not maybe all in, but at least something in you so that you can start this.
Okay. So I would love to ask you more and more questions, but we have to start wrapping up our conversation. And just before we wrap up, as mentioned in the beginning, you have also a lot of hats related with Riga Business School. You were a student once and now you're a lecturer. So First of all, about your student experience when you were studying the professional MBA. So what do you see as the main benefit for you, maybe in your professional growth, personal growth from these studies in Riga Business School?
First of all, my assumption before I came to Riga Business School, because I had some experience in Latvia in other schools, and my feeling was that Latvia is not the place where you can get good education. Unfortunately, this was my mindset at this moment. And I was really quite positively surprised that this is not true. So being here, having the professional lecturers, real professionals, not the ones who has the good theoretical background, but I mean, coming from the industries, working in big companies with practical things they can share and having the community around me, like other students. And I have at least two or three cases within my students that managed to make their own companies during the studies. So this proves that it was a really good decision for me. And as I mentioned, so my master thesis was also like part of building the specific business for Latelecom electricity service. So it was also like something that I did here and brought to real life. And it led to quite good success. So that's why I actually liked being here. And I'm really proud having this MBA degree from the Riga Business School.
Okay. Likewise. And as a lecturer, what gives you the biggest satisfaction being a lecturer here?
I can share you one secret. And this is going to be revealed for the students as well. But actually, I'm here for multiple reasons. First of all, to train myself up, because being the lecturer also gives you the always willingness to keep up you with the knowledge and understanding about things you share with others. Secondly, I'm here to find potential employees, because I evaluate my students every time I'm in a class, and I'm seeing who could be maybe somewhere in my roles, what I'm looking for, that I'm filling in some strategic or tactical levels. And there's quite a few people already working with me in other business areas together. And I mean, it came from the Riga Business School. And what else I'm doing, and this is actually, I shared that with my existing class, that I also have some challenges about markets, about operational stuff, and many other things. And this is really great, because I can give the homeworks for the students. I'm allowed to do this. And so quite a few times I give my challenges for the students as a homeworks. And recently there was one class where I also shared one of the challenges, that was actually a challenge for the customer that we were serving with. Of course, not like disclosing the names, but like the business concept or the issue was described. Mm-mm. And I already had my solution in my mind, but when I saw how they presented their solution, I said, wait a second, this is way better than my own, so I want to use this one. And I already shared with my team, and they were quite excited. So this class that I'm training today, I mean, not today, but right now in parallel, so tomorrow we're going to have lectures, there's one group really strong, and they are giving good ideas for us to, for me to support my business. So it means it's win-win for, I hope, everyone here.
Yeah. Well, I think that in this example that you mentioned, you really described very well the essence of Riga Business School, how it works, and how everybody shares knowledge, and everybody as a result benefits from that. So thank you for sharing that. And as we have to close our today's session, anything else you want to mention as your last words to all viewers and listeners?
So basically, believe your challenges, believe your goals, and be the leaders for yourselves. And some of you want to be in big companies, big enterprises, some of you want to be like more individuals, but I mean, all dreams are accepted and all are fine. If you have the right mindset and understanding of what you want to, reach. So it's just have your time, have your plan, have your agenda, and it will lead to success. And if you need any support, you always have to find your partner. Maybe it's your mother, maybe it's your friend, maybe it's your lecturer who can give you this partner support to solve your issues, questions, or challenges.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Artur. Thank you very much for this insightful and exciting conversation. And if you enjoyed this episode, you know that there are many more, and you can look for them in Riga Business School YouTube channel, or also in the podcast streaming apps and Bottom Line Studio podcast. So thank you for viewing, and thank you for listening, and till the next episode.
Thanks.